I've had, I must say, an extremely interesting 4 weeks. I started off taking a break of 1 week, and then I realized that it would be very good for me to take an extended break. So I extended it to a full month. I'm glad I did that. It has helped me personally enormously. I think that I have this possibility to overdo things, to work too much, sometimes to take the burdens of others too much. But in this particular case, there was just too much to do, and so I needed time to do it all. And especially I needed time to deepen my understanding of myself again and how I relate to my physical body, emotional body, my spirit, my energy, and the world around me. It's a situation that every human being has to deal with. But I can't speak for every human being. I can speak for myself. But I know that everybody shares this need to revisit themselves periodically, to simply put away for a while the self that exists for others and to embrace the self as it is without its encumbrances, without its entanglements with the world around. A kind of detachment from the burdens of the universe. And I felt personally that when I did that, it was very relieving in some senses. It was very strengthening in other senses. And I was able to learn something which I found to have been absolutely fabulous. And although I didn't really want to make this discussion today into a what I did when I was on my break, in reality, it is so that this is what I mainly did when I was on my break. I learned a very fabulous technique. And that caused me to go off into different directions and understand things in other ways, which I was really happy about. I'm really glad I did that. I'm really glad that it was something that could have been useful to myself and to others. So I think I'll explain a little bit. I have been researching health issues for a long time. I have been researching issues which had to deal with how the physical body relates with the spiritual body. I have been researching issues on how each of us are affected by what we do, by what we feel, by what we say, by what we think. You know that there's this saying, Linus Pauling, I think it was, said, you are what you eat. You also find in the Indian literatures, they speak about association, that you become that which you associate with. There are many situations where the external world will affect us, and that the secret to good health is to maintain one's individuality in the face of the pressures of the exterior world. As I mentioned previously, Jung speaks about this in great detail in relationship to the individuation process, how babies, children learn to develop themselves as individuals in the context of their family, in the context of their friends. And there's a very clear indication in all traditions of the world that, and I don't just mean religious traditions, I mean also social traditions, cultures, doesn't matter where you live, every small baby who grows into a child, who grows into a youth, has to deal with this process of integrating into society. In some cultures, they do it by rites of passage. Like, rites of passage means like, you know, whenever there is a certain situation, when a boy reaches puberty, or when somebody dies, or when they're going to be married, or when they're going to go out into the world and work. These are called rites of passage. It's the way in which you move from one state of life to the next. And it's interesting, at least to me, that these rites of passage are there in all cultures. Even spiritually, you have these initiations, you have these allowances to move deeper into more esoteric aspects of a spiritual culture, and so on. In other words, as you develop, so you are allowed entrance into other forms of development of your spirit, of your powers, of your capacity, of your integration. Now, I have seen that one of the most important aspects of this integrating process, one of the most important aspects of this developmental process, is awareness. That, for example, when you go through a particular rite of passage, when you go through a particular stage of individuation, in other words, when you move forward in your evolution, it is always accompanied by an awareness. That means that you have now become aware of something you were not aware of before, and this awareness empowers your forward motion. Now, one of the prices you pay with awareness is that this can create difficulty. You know the saying, it's folly to be wise, for ignorance is bliss. For example, if you thought you had, you know, $20,000 in your bank account, and you were out spending money because you needed to buy things, and you thought money was there all along and more money would come in, so long as you don't know what's actually happening, you don't have any troubles. As soon as you find out that actually you've got practically no money left, or you've overdrawn your account, you become very disturbed in your mind, you get full of anxiety, and it's very difficult to even earn more money because you're in such anxiety about your situation. Now, I'll relate this to what I was speaking about in the beginning, about I always like to deal with researching health issues and how it relates to the body and how it relates to emotions and our whole integrating life, integration of life. I have been interested in a long time, ever since we lived in Sweden, in Malmo. One of Kamala's friends, his name is Finn, she knows him through astrology. He was doing some programs in his place in Humlegarden, Humlebeck, in Denmark. And so I would go there periodically whenever these programs were going on. And He is running an alternative cancer clinic, probably one of the most famous ones in Europe, I guess. And we were eating lunch together, and he was asking me if I knew anybody who could be his chief doctor there, because he was in really bad shape at the time. So I suggested Nanda Priya from Georgia, who was a doctor and who needed some work to do, I suppose, in that regard. So I suggested him and helped arrange for Nanda Priya to come over, and he actually, yes, became the chief doctor there and so on. He's now also working in the Riggs Hospital in Copenhagen as an oncologist. He's doing quite well. I'm very happy to. So during my interaction with them and understanding about these alternative cures, I became very fascinated by cancer. And the reason was because I was sitting down in the room where people would gather, and I just allowed myself to understand as much as I could about them. And as far as I could see, each and every one of them had some form of an unresolvable trauma within their heart, which created some kind of an imbalance, which was the root cause of the cancer they had. Now, I did not know at that time, and I could not know exactly which trauma it was. I was not working to do that. I was just observing in general which specific trauma was responsible for what kind of a cancer. This was not my research. I was just curious if there was anything in common, to try to understand something in common. And I felt that. And this was maybe in the year, I don't know, maybe 2000, 2001, maybe 2002, I don't remember. But I found that to be so. In my own observation, I had no way to verify it. I had no way to understand it better. So that was just my own observation. And I was speaking about this with other people as much as I could and trying to understand it better. Now, during my 4 weeks of research and betterment and so on, because this is what I do, I research things. If I find a problem or I find something which is interesting to me, I get into it, because there are many people who face similar situations, and I always like to be of service, so I'd like to expand my knowledge. And in one of my research, I came upon, actually I was in my dentist's office. One of the things I did these last 4 weeks was spend a lot of time in my dentist's office. And he's an alternative dentist. He's a biological dentist. And he has a lot of books in his office. So while I'm waiting for all of these marvelous things to happen in my mouth, I'm reading his books. And in the book, one of the books I read was some link and to a website. And that website sent me to another website that sent me to another website. And I finally came upon a website called GermanNewMedicine.com. And what was fascinating to me was this doctor had proven through many personal experiences and through examining patients and by doing incredible studies of over 6,000 cases that a trauma, an unexpected, overwhelming trauma, is at the root of every single cancer. So here was somebody proving what I had thought about. And I was like, wow, that is so cool. And so here we have the situation where there's like something happens to you which is totally unexpected, which is very powerful, and which shakes you in such a way that it just throws your whole electrical system, your whole energy system in your body into a new kind of a spin. And this man showed also that there was a relationship between the type of the trauma and the way in which a certain area of the brain reacted to the trauma and a corresponding physical location in the body where the cells of the body started to respond, not by creating cancer, but by growing, by trying to compensate for the impulses which were sent to that particular place or that particular organ. And that because they would grow in an uncontrolled way, because of this impulse there in the brain sending signals to that specific area, that it turned into a cancerous growth or something like that. Now I was like really interested. And I said, now that's very, very interesting, because if we can understand it to be based on a trauma, there must be a way to deal with the trauma. I know there are many ways. I've gone through so many different techniques. After all, I've had my share of traumas, as have all of us. And then I was, because I usually go through like Mercola's website, because he's got so much stuff. Eventually you'll find something. And then there were these other sites. Okay. And there was this really cool technique called EFT. It's called the Emotional Freedom Technique. And it's a very simple technique, but the application of it requires a lot of maturity, a lot of understanding, where one finds out the core issues in the body that are related to particular emotional traumas or emotional events which are very significant to us, and to release them by massaging certain acupuncture points while repeating about the trauma. So this was really, really cool. Here I was thinking about how to help people or to deal with situations of health which were developed through sudden traumas, were to relieve one from the electrical disturbance of these traumas. And here's this technique. So I actually went and spent $70. They're selling practically 15 DVDs I got for $70. And they say you can even copy them 100 times for your friends without worrying about it. They're not into this for the money. They offer the whole thing free on their website. If you want DVDs, you're basically paying for the copy costs and the DVDs. And I'm watching a DVD that this person had a water phobia. Since he was a child, he would not go in the water. He could not swim. He was over 50. He could not swim. He would get so hysterical about water, he would faint if he had to go near water. And after 1 hour of working on him from different points of view and perspectives about water, this man was dunking his head under the water. Everybody was just amazed. He had friends there who were just practically crying. He was just joyous and laughing and dunking underwater, that he got freed from this phobia. Okay, I was totally convinced, so I have just been for these weeks just working on this and working on clearing out everything I could think of. Any possible trauma anywhere at any time, even those I couldn't think of, clear them all out. So it's been a very, very interesting period of time. You can all find out about this EFT. You just have to Google EFT. The guy's name is Craig. And you just Google that and you'll find everything about this. Go to the original website. It's all information is there. It's just a really fabulous thing I thought I would share with all. Because, you know, many of us have been trying in different disciplines, spiritual disciplines, for all these years. I can safely say anybody who is listening to this broadcast live today, anybody who is listening to the broadcast on recording, and again, I must remind you to always check the news on the main page of harrymedia.net to find out the latest about broadcasting news, because I will also be going to Russia at the beginning of October, so the broadcast will have to be rescheduled. But all of us who are in any way interested in what we do here today are 100% going to be interested in spiritual life and have been engaged in some form of it in previous times. There's no doubt about it. Whether you're from Eastern traditions or Western traditions or whatever traditions, religions or spiritual groups or yoga disciplines or whatever, everybody has that common interest. We are interested in the spirit. We are interested in developing the spirit. And most of us have at one point engaged in some specific kind of discipline which demanded of us certain modes of activity, demanded of us certain kinds of, I would say, commitment, or a certain kind of transformation of our actions to fit within a regulated discipline. And now, that is fine, and probably we all did it really enthusiastically. But at one point, we have this kind of a, shall we say, conflict or a friction or a feeling of not being comfortable as our ideals move in one direction, and yet our physical bodies seem to not move accordingly, or our emotional bodies seem to be dissociated. I have even seen people whose spiritual ideals are off to the one side, emotional ideals are off to another side, physical bodies off somewhere down on the bottom, and the mind is all over the place. And all of these elements are disconnected. Some people have some of the elements connected, some of the elements disconnected. Some people are not even aware of the fact that these things, this disconnection is taking place. Many are not aware. Some people even think that it's okay that the body is just neglected until something happens which forces them to deal with the body, such as a disease or an incapacitation. But you all know all this. This is not really the point. The point is that all of us share that our desire is similar to develop spiritually. Even if we have many different ideas of what that means, we all know basically we wish to evolve, we wish to make connection to the divine beings, we wish to make connection to the divine atmosphere, we wish to enter into that divinity, we wish to reflect that divinity as people, we wish to do good for others, we wish to be of service, we wish to spread that light of the divine energy throughout the world, to be of service to humanity, to be of service to the world. We all share this desire in one way or another. Some of us have even more specific desires to heal others or to teach or to do a very specific kind of service. But basically, we all have a very similar desire to be of service. And this is a very important thing. So, this is the nature of our service, nature of our existence. It's one of our constitutional qualities to always have some kind of a realization and experience of that spirit that we are. Because any holistic understanding of the being will always be within the context of the spirit of the being, the spiritual energy, that life which is the life of the body, that life which is the feeling, that experiences, that actually has connection to now and actually has that existence which is what we are and is what it is. Now, there's an obstacle to doing that. There are many obstacles. Sometimes these obstacles are described in terms of attachment to the objects of the senses, or selfishness, or exploitation, or greed, or whatever. There are many things brought forward as obstacles for the living being to accomplish this integration into the spirit. I feel that all of these things have relevance in as much as they are related to something which is blocking us from integrating as a whole being, as a complete person, as a balanced, complete individual. Now, a process like EFT is very interesting. What I feel is that the more you can integrate all of your existence into that spiritual whole that you are, the more you have that capacity to expand your spiritual power. You know, I'll just jump ahead and then move back again. You know, we have done these exercises where we are raising Kundalini and using that energy to do something wonderful in the etheric plane. And I found I have found in myself, and I know that others feel the same way, that sometimes the flow is not so easy. Sometimes the flow is blocked. And I must admit, I was never very clear about what those blocks were. Now, it's easy to say there's a block. It is very difficult to say that block is a block because that block is this whatever. You can know there's a block. But how that block relates to something in me is very hard for me to know. Like, you know, you're moving energies around, all of a sudden you find it's not going just the way you want it. It may be even stuck. It may feel a tension there. So you can get some result out of it. I mean, whenever you move energies, whenever you deal with the spirit, you get a result. There's no doubt about it. But it's something lacking. You know it. You know there's just something lacking. You don't feel, you don't walk away, go, yeah, that was it. You don't really feel like that. You feel like, I wish it was just a little more. I want to go a little bit deeper. I want to get a little more connection, a little more power with it. So, you know, I must confess, when I started doing this EFT, and I started getting through with all of these, I mean, we're talking about really historical traumatic blocks going back all the way, you know, I mean, all the way back to birth, and just working on them one after another, continuously, day after day. So about maybe, I don't know, 5-6 days ago, I don't remember, maybe a week ago, after doing this now for good steady 2 weeks only, and then that flow, it changed from, now I don't know how to describe this better, previously it was an energy flow, now it became a liquid flow. Now, obviously, it was still energy, but it became a liquid. You know, it's kind of like the difference between if you have water in its gaseous form and then water in its liquid form. If you can just imagine the difference. If you're like dealing with the gas, water vapor, or let's put it this way. If you want to take a shower with water vapor, as compared with water. If you take a shower with water vapor, you get wet. It'll accumulate eventually and you'll get wet. But it's not the same as real, solidified, it's not real, liquid water. So similarly, this thing became liquid energy. And it just expanded everywhere in such a totally different way. And everything changed. And I understood that this whole problem of that everybody is facing in all religious traditions and spiritual traditions, in yogic disciplines or any discipline, is that when you try to climb over all of these traumas. And take my word for it, there's not one person, not one person who does not have these traumatic experiences. Every single person has them. Now, because, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, I can't stand sitting here and trying to say, you know, oh, I got it all together and, you know, I'm really something here special kind of thing. And, you know, we are in this together. And I just like to help share that the way in which I deal with it, the way in which you deal with it, we have the same problems. We have the same things we have to deal with. It is just the nature of what we are and the circumstances within which we live, the world in which we live, and the sharing of this way to relieve ourselves of these incredible burdens which have been placed upon us is, I think, just something wonderful. And, you know, when you deal with these things, instead of trying to climb over them to spiritual enlightenment, it's completely different. Now, I know that in my personal spiritual life, although I tried and tried really hard, when I have to climb over the traumas or around them or try to somehow or another place them somewhere else and just go on and, you know, everything's great, eventually there becomes a dissociation between my idealistic spirit and the reality of the rest of me, as we described before. And eventually you've got to bring your energy with you, because spirit is an experience. And an experience requires the full sentient being of the spirit. Otherwise, your experience is limited. It becomes a mental experience, or it becomes even a dissociated emotional experience, or it becomes an idealistic illusion. So when you try to climb over your traumas and be successful in spiritual life, it doesn't actually work. And that's the problem. And when we deal with the traumatic blockages of our life, we deal with the traumatic situations in our life directly, what happens is our spirit has this logarithmic increase because of our connection, our energetic integration, where our spirit now moves forward just in the way it's supposed to be, as a complete whole, connecting with the divine in our experience of the ever-present. It's really totally different. And therefore, I'm very, very grateful to these people who have done this EFT. Of course, you know there are many techniques. I don't know very many. I know a couple. Some people say this technique is great. Some people say that technique is great. Maybe after a while people change their techniques. But the idea is to deal with these things, to deal with them consciously, to deal with them energetically, enthusiastically. Because when you do, it's incredible the difference in the way you manifest your spiritual energy. How even just this simple act of raising your kundalini transforms totally into a totally different kind of an activity. You start to understand a little bit more about how Vedic literature was describing things. I don't want to get into that now, but you start to understand how words were misinterpreted, concepts were misinterpreted according to the mentality of people who took it into their own way of seeing it. But that's why they never had the capacities which went along with the attainments that you read about, because they misunderstood what was being spoken about. That's why the attainments were not there. Okay, lots of psychic attainments. A lot of psychic things, because that has a lot to do with the mind. A lot of psychics amongst the advanced spiritualists, able to do things psychically. But this attainment that you read about, you never see it. So it's to me the key. That's how I feel. It's to me the key to integration as a complete whole. So personally, I'm going to continue with that. Continue with everything I do that, you know, kind of makes me feel that I am moving forward. For me personally, unless I feel I'm moving forward, I just don't have any enthusiasm. Because energy's got to flow. Energy does not like being stuck. It's got to flow. When it flows, you feel good because it's part of what you are, the flow. And when it's stuck or blocked in any way, you don't feel good because that's not the way it is supposed to be. It feels best when it's flowing, not when it's stuck. So removing blockages due to traumas, removing all these things is so advantageous for spiritual life. I'm going to put up some links as soon as I get around to it in the Harry Media link page, and maybe even I will write about it. I will write about it and will perhaps also put it in my little forum. I don't know. There's so much. These people have done such a great job of presenting it. I could never do it better. I mean, they have a newsletter. Comes out every day where masters in this technique share the expansion of the technique. It's like an open source spiritual development project of freeing yourself from all of these problems. And what I find to be so mind-blowing is that this guy who does it, I mean, he never presents anything spiritual. He never speaks about that. Yet I look at this fellow and I'm like amazed that he looks like such a good person. Such a good person. And just like emanating goodness everywhere. Just that mode of goodness, that spiritual feeling, that of just purity. And I'm amazed at this. That simply by removing, of course I don't know if that's all he does, but simply by removing all of these things which don't belong there. You've heard this before. The unwanted impositions, that which is imposed upon us, or we impose upon ourselves, anything covering the soul, to just systematically let it go, systematically release it, systematically free yourself. That's why it's called freedom. And when I would suppose this man is very far along that line, after all, he's been doing it for 30 years or something like that, researching it, or at least 20 years, researching it, developing it, doing it. And I see just no obstacle to the spirituality. In fact, I see somebody who's very integrated with everything, integrated with the whole world, so that the spirit just flows naturally. You don't have to make something special out of the spirit. It's just part of life. It's not like you have to label it spiritual and then say that's material, or you have to make some distinction. It's just purely part of life. And this man is just integrated in life. And he's just simply helping people, traveling around, teaching, doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, there are other guys who now have written some books, who are very famous, who tell something interesting. They'll charge $20,000 a day to do a program. $20,000 a day. And here's this guy and his partner, Adriana. They just go around and do this all over the place. And they're not making profit off of it. It's just incredible. It's like there's this amazing gift being given free. Sometimes people ask me, I mean, not people who are devotional people, but just regular people, they say, well, can't you somehow use what you're doing to make money off of it? And I've explained to them, I said that if I had to start thinking about how to make money off of what I'm doing, I would no longer be able to do what I'm doing. Not that I have a problem with money. I love money. Universe, send me billions. I'm happy with it. No problem. I'll use it for something good. But to mix the two is very difficult. I can't even live with myself. If I had to stand up in front of an audience of people and think that I'm charging $20,000 a day to do this, I don't think I'd be able to do it. I don't know why. It's just me. I would really, maybe I would think I'm not giving them $20,000 worth. Well, even if I thought that, how do you quantify what is $20,000 worth? In other words, if let's say I do something that helps others, how do I put a price on that? How do I say, okay, I just transformed your life and that'll cost you $100? It just doesn't compute. I That's why I say, if people do something, I do something for people. If you want, donate something. That's all. I don't want to know about it. It's too much for me to have to put a price on a spiritual sharing or a spiritual service. After all, I'm not paying, for instance, those guys up there, wherever they are, whoever they are. In other words, let's say I do a session with somebody, I ask, please tell me something about this person, or can I connect with their guides, or, and I'm not like, I don't transfer to their bank account. Basically, I'm just using them. So how do you deal with this, like, monetary transfer? Or if God gives you some power or healing, how do you transfer it back to God? Do you do a puja, you know, offer some more food on the altar? It becomes very complex. It's a very complex problem. I know, for example, that, I mean, I have to live. We need money. Everybody needs money. Now, how do spiritual people make money? And the reason I'm bringing this up, because even if you are able to do this spiritual thing, the whole thing breaks down about money. We've given the example before of this guy Walsh and his conversations with God and what he's become, according to what I've heard from people who are very close to him. How do you avoid money destroying spirit? That's why in the old days, sannyasis, well, not even sannyasis, but the brahmanas would just simply do whatever they did. You know, they used to sit outside the village, teach kids. The kids would bring some rice from home or some vegetables from home or things that the brahmana needed. He would be taken care of and he would perform that service. There was this brahminical culture. It's a culture of, if you know, if you have, you share. People know that when somebody's sharing, you reciprocate. It's not like you would just simply take, you reciprocate. And that way, it all went on somewhat okay. You will also find very special brahmanas. For example, I would say like Chanakya would never take money from the king, would never take any facility from the king. Because as soon as you are given profit or you are dependent on somebody, you are no longer neutral. I find that also in the more subtle sense, not even just money. I sometimes feel when I'm speaking to all of you, I have to somehow say something that's going to be pleasing to you, because if you don't like what I say, you won't listen anymore. Do you realize the way in which these subtle things are there, these subtle like implications are there, that I become dependent. You pay me the currency of appreciation or of attendance. And I have to supply, I have to present, I have to produce something you want. Kind of like when you play music, or it becomes like that. And so some people get around that by saying, you pay me, and then I give you what you want. We find that also in relationships. We find that between mothers and daughters and sons and parents and grandparents and friends and business associates and school relationships and a government which asks you to give your life for your country. There are all these like ways in which people demand of you, in which you pay. So, you know, I think it's very important that we deal with all of these issues head on. We don't avoid them. We are honest with how we feel, yet not honest to the point where we're pushing upon others, just from the point of view of presentation. Yeah, not to be honest in a sense where, you know, your honesty becomes where you're pushing your opinion or you're pushing your feeling on others to such an extent that you're you're invading their space, so to speak. I know that I've kind of like wandered here through four or five different subjects. I suppose next week I'll do it better. I'm a little out of practice. but somehow it seems that this is all related. It's all related. The stress we have over money, the stress we have over the way in which we are seen by others or the way we see others, the way we see ourselves, and therefore the way we interact with others. This is a stress. And ultimately, the number one cause of all disease is stress. You know, just like when they say overeating, it's a stress upon your digestive system. Anxiety, it's a stress upon your emotional system. Whenever your existence is stressed, it throws it off balance. So money is a huge source of stress. Or one's own self-image is a huge source of stress. Or others' demands is a huge source of stress. Or it's just, you can find stress everywhere if you look for it. And this relaxation of those stresses is an essential element of spiritual survival. Anyway, I would recommend very much this EFT technique. It's very easy to do. There is a Russian version of the whole thing. It is there is on one of their pages, emofree, emofree.com. There is a Russian version. And it's a very highly developed thing, and you'll probably have a great time with it. Here's this this is a kind of a question, but I think it's also more importantly, it's a testimonial to the power of healing, the power of spirituality, and yet I would suggest the power that each spirit has to do something wonderful in their own life. So I'll read this. It's half of a commentary, and then there's a question how I feel about it. I would like to share with you my personal life experience. Yeah, of course. You just translate as you like, as fast as you like. You got it written there. I would like to share with you my personal life experience. How I got rid of trauma which caused cancer, and then also from physical casualty of all this. A 13 centimeters, this is like mind-boggling, tumor that was growing very rapidly, day after day. I mean, this is, to me, like inconceivable. So, I mean, I'm just amazed at this story. Despite physical pain, I fall in love with the Lord, whom at that time I knew only as Jesus Christ, who is the divine Son of Krishna. I fall in love with those life values that he himself had spoken about. I began to fully and forever love that life direction he pointed. All this direction is the vertical. And this direction is the vertical from earth to heaven. I suppose that means the direct line from earth to heaven. I began to look not at lower principles of existence on the planet, not at my disease, but at supreme universal principles and laws. Love to the Lord got strengthened. The pain got diminished. Love became permanent, and now it never leaves my life at no circumstances. pains stopped completely and metastasis disappeared. When a person is in a state of divine love, and when one knows very well that the strongest love of the deity is pointed towards him, then the influences of the stars no longer impact him, neither his own destiny or karma. Do you believe in such a state of spiritual love and such simple and natural and effortless cure through the love of God and his own healing? First of all, I'm just really, I love to hear when people deal with such situations in such a way that they actually cure it. I mean, this is really a wonderful thing. I mean, a 13-centimeter tumor. This was not a typographical error. You really typed 13 and not 1.3? 13, my God, that's just, that's unbelievable. I mean, that's incredible. It's that is a very, very large tumor. So curing such a tumor through such spiritual devotion and love is just absolutely a wonderful testimony to the power of the individual spirit. I think that spirit like this, that this power of the spirit, that the power that we all have spiritually can be used like this to perform transformations on the physical plane. Now, obviously, I very much appreciate such a thing. It's just a wonderful thing. There's even that healer, Bruno Gröning, who just simply brought down that spiritual, he called it the Heilstrom, the healing current of the Lord, and just would heal all kinds of people, even of the most difficult diseases. People would throw away their crutches and so on. I think that there are people who know how to use such energies, who do it as agents of God. But even he died of cancer of the throat because of all of the, I suppose, reactions he took upon himself from healing others or other circumstances. He died, I think, at the age of 43. So he didn't really work to transform his own situation like that. He only worried about others. So it's an amazing thing to see that such an enormous tumor was cured through such love. And that's just wonderful. I think such ideals are just fabulous. But I think there's more to it. I don't think it's effortless. I mean, it is presented in this commentary as effortless. It's not effortless. Okay, it's effortless in the sense that one is so relaxed. One has managed to just focus one's attention without being diverted by other things in life. Perhaps by the ringing alarm bell of death that is there in the form of this tumor. Perhaps by previous lives, evolution and development, and this life's evolution and development, that one had this capacity to just focus and let go all other ideals in life, relax totally and just totally connect in love with God. This is not effortless. It's a product of enormous amounts of focus, concentration, and dropping off that which was extraneous. And yet, it's effortless in the sense that it's the product of such deep relaxation, a product of love. Now, I know that when you are at a certain point in this process, and that love is just flowing, it is effortless as far as you are concerned. But as far as, let's say, any other person, whoever they may be, let's say you take any person off the street with a 13-centimeter tumor. Now, the problem with that, okay, is that for this person to duplicate what you did, they have to, first of all, not be hysterical. That alone is an amazing feat. Let's say, for example, you feel okay, you got like some pain, you go to a doctor, and the doctor tells you, you've got 6 months to live, maybe we can cut it out, maybe we can't, it's this huge cancer, you can do chemotherapy, it might help. The first thing that's going to happen in your mind is you're going to be totally and completely hysterical. It is the first and most predominating response that people have. In fact, such a news causes the degradation of people's conditions so rapidly, they lose all spirit. It's almost as if they've been given the death sentence, and they just simply give up and just slide into death. That is the usual response to such a news. So you first have to get somebody off the street who finds out they have such a problem to not be hysterical. You also have to get them to not do chemotherapy. Because as soon as you do chemotherapy, you lose your consciousness, your capacities. Their body will have a very hard time to cure. I'm only speaking in terms of if you want to do a spontaneous cure, like we're talking in this discussion here. I'm not advocating any particular medical technique. Then you would have to have them perhaps accept God, because maybe they don't. Then you would have to have them accept God to such a degree that they would believe, that absolute conviction and dedication to the Supreme would cure their disease. But maybe they're also an alcoholic. Maybe they're also a chain smoker. Maybe they're addicted to medications. And maybe these things are blocking their consciousness. You get the idea. Maybe in your case, you felt it was effortless. And I can imagine it was so, because in your case, you are a spiritual person. Your whole life is flowing upwards towards this God, towards the Supreme, towards the Divine. Your faith, your devotion has been there for a long time. It's not a recent arrival. It's something which has been going on for many lifetimes. So you took that news and then dealt with it in the way in which you felt very natural about. And that's all fine. And it worked. And I definitely believe in such a state. And I definitely believe that people like you. Now, how many people in the world are like you? I don't know any others. But I believe that it's just wonderful. So I'm not sure how to answer the question, because the question is, do I believe in such a state? Sure. Do I believe in such a simple, natural, and effortless cure through the love of God and His own healing? Absolutely. Do I believe that you did it? Definitely. Do I believe that you can do it again? Absolutely. So that answers the question. Do I believe that's something we can realistically expect many others to do? I'm not sure. But I am sure that I think at least, okay, I think that I'm trying to help people get to that point where they can, by their own spiritual connections, by their own spiritual energy, overcome these physical disabilities, overcome these very difficult situations in their own lives and help others to do the same. So I'm not sure if my answer is satisfactory. So give me an indication. Ah, okay, good. You're welcome. Like I said, I got a lot of really, really good comments and questions in all of this. Here's another question, which I think is along the line. Now, I spoke about the traumas that we all have and about my recent experiences of dissolving trauma. And the question is this. There is a technique that they're interested in, the questioner, which deals with the traumas of our forefathers, our ancestors. Traumas which we inherit, I would suppose. A kind of like accepting energy of a genealogy. In other words, accepting a kind of a burden at birth which has been placed upon us according to the family that we have taken birth in. Now, this is a really cool thing. I mean, at least the question and at least the concept that the question is talking about. And it's cool because if you think about the Vedic ideals, there's the forefathers. There's propitiating the pittas, they're called, the forefathers. There's a planet of the forefathers or whatever. There are ceremonies, there are days, there are the Shraddha sacrifice, there are days in which you do it, and there's certain ways you do it. In other words, there's ways of appeasing or even helping the forefathers. If the forefathers are in a bad situation, you help them to a better situation and thus help yourself. Now, this is there in that Vedic literature. And if you also think about, let's look at it from another point of view. Let's look at it from the point of view that there is a collective energy and we are part of this collective energy. We share the mental situations. We share the emotional situations, even the physical situations of our family, of those who we live with, of the community around us. And this sharing, this interaction we have is a product of everything that we are associated with. Now the body, think about the body. It's got DNA. DNA is a structure which is something that we inherit from our birth. From our birth, we inherit this from our parents who've inherited it from their parents. So we have this chain, this DNA chain of this inheritance where the structure of our bodies, the structure of that which causes us to have certain characteristics is carried with us. So simply from the point of view of genes and genealogy, and it's interesting how they are connected, this genetic influence alone is enough to explain or to clarify that there is certainly an effect from our ancestors. Then, if you move beyond the physical, you will see that the mind that we have, our experiences or the energies we have accepted, a lot of this has come within the womb. Within the womb, we absorbed so many things. And in the womb, we got this from our mother. And our mother brought with her that which she got and which she's creating. And we can see how the ancestors' energies can influence us energetically through the womb. From a third point of view, our ancestors are still interested in us. I mean, sometimes if you ever do some kind of psychic thing with somebody, you'll find like your grandparents are come, or some lost relative will come and want to give you some information, or some connection is there or whatever. So they're still interested, if you believe that. They're still interested in you. There's an energy there, a connection. Now, the exact question which is being asked here is, we are influenced by the traumas. And now, trauma of the ancestors. A trauma is a very specific event. Something took place at a certain time and it made an effect. Now, technically, if I bang on my arm, it's a trauma. It may be a very little trauma. I may get a result, a black and blue mark. Understand? Anything that impacts me, either physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, it's a trauma. It's an impact. It's an event. Now, obviously, you are not sharing the bruises of your forefathers. You are not even sharing the diseases of your forefathers. This is not the particular kind of a trauma which is being addressed. But if, for example, the trauma that I had was associated with some kind of emotional situation or some kind of very deep experience which affected me very deeply, that goes into the ether. It becomes part of the etheric record. It's the kind of a thing which creates an elemental. And those energies impact us and can create traumas within us. We feel the effect, not trauma. Sorry, cancel that. Run that back. I said it wrong. They create reactions within us. In other words, we share the effect of the trauma from the ancestor. Therefore, also, I know this may be funny to hear, but I was using EFT on feelings I had from previous lifetimes. I was clearing, I thought anyway, things which related to traumas of previous lifetimes. And it was really cool. So that session you want to have on Tuesday will most likely at least have some effect, if the person knows what they're doing, on you, which will be beneficial, because there are definite effects. In the 100% total of your condition, I cannot say how much of it will be affected by, will be affected beneficially by doing that kind of a technique. But some portion of it is there. And in EFT, don't forget, I mean, I'm not teaching you EFT. I haven't even started doing that. Because they do it much better than I ever could. But the idea is to get down to the core original issues, the core things which many other problems are resting upon. So it's possible in some situations, some circumstances, the problem is related to previous life carryovers or DNA or I don't know, whatever you want to call it. So I find that interesting. It's like a, we're really getting into fascinating things here today. So I hope that discussion has been useful for you. I don't know, you can type something and let me know. Here's a question which I think probably has, which is probably of interest to many people. This person was saying that previously they tried to do all the meditations where I was speaking about Kundalini. But they were saying they don't think they were feeling something special. And if I'm not feeling anything, does it mean that I have so many blocks that it doesn't work for me? Or it works anyway? I find this question to be interesting to examine in different points of view, because sometimes when we do meditation and I'm guiding you and I say, now feel this, now do this, I know some people just don't connect to that. It's not something that they feel either aware of or connected to. They just have never experienced it. So if I say something, I mean, it's outrageous what I say, bring up that energy. I mean, it's kind of outrageous for me to sit here and say that. I know that. I'm taking such steps. I'm assuming too much. Yet, at the same time, I don't know any other way to do it. I mean, at least not in these broadcasts. There are this Genevieve Louise Paulson, this old lady, she lives quite near to here, Arkansas, if she's still alive. She has many wonderful techniques. Genevieve Louise Paulson, she wrote those books that... she has written many techniques which are very useful, which are very powerful for understanding the Kundalini, understanding how it works, how it flows, how you can feel it by moving things here and there. But there's a lot of courses involved and a lot of practices and a lot of exercises involved. It's not so simple. So what I try to do is make you aware of the source of it, where it all starts from, the exact place that it starts from. And then once you have felt that, to kind of draw out energy there. So in other words, the idea is to first experience the energy and then draw out some energy from it. You could do the same exact experience. If you have a hard time relating to this Kundalini jazz, you could just, for example, create a ball of energy in your hands. That's not so difficult to do. Visualize this ball of energy and feel it. Feel the actual dimensionality of it, the actual thickness of it, the density of it in your hands. And once you've got that feeling, let it just sit there, and then you can either with your fingers just draw out some of that energy. So instead of it being a ball, you're drawing it out, you know, like it would become like one of these cartoon things, which you're, you know, where instead of the text there and it would go to the mouth of the cartoon character, you know, these, you know what I'm talking about? These arrows. So you would draw out this energy, yeah? And then you would feel it draw out. Now, if you can do that, if you've got it together so that you can do that, then you can do this thing with the Kundalini, because it's exactly the same. Once you learn how to draw out from that ball with your fingers, don't use your fingers. Just have the ball there and do it with your visualization. Let that energy flow out. Even if it flows down, which is easy because there's gravity, just let it flow. I mean, even if, for example, you can bring energy down from the heavens, right? What are you doing? You're letting that flow of energy come into your Sahasrara chakra and enter throughout all of you. So what are you doing? You're taking energy from, figuratively, this big ball in the universe, and you're drawing down part of it into your body, right? So take that big ball, make it a little ball, should be easier, put it there where the kundalini is usually situated, and instead of drawing it down through, you draw it up through. It's quite simple when you think of it that way. Because all you're really doing is from this ball, the source of the energy, the kundalini source of energy, which is in our own body, you're bringing that up in the same way as you bring it down, you see? But in this particular case, the source of the energy is not the whole universe. The source of the energy is that kundalini, which is in your own body. It has a physical presence. Okay, it's an energy, but it's situated in your own body. Just like if you have here the soul and you feel the rays flowing out in the I Am meditation. So if you can just visualize that kind of like, you know, ping pong ball of energy between your anus and genitals just up about so far, about, you know, 2 inches or 2.5 inches or whatever, 2 inches. And you feel that ball of energy. If you can just become aware of it as a ball of energy, you can also use the Vedic thing of the coiled snake. But I don't like having snakes flow up my spine. Sorry. It's just the idea of a snake kind of freaks me out. I mean, anyway, you can do whatever visualization you like, but if you just see it as this ball of energy there, and then you just bring it up in the same way you bring it down. You can bring it up as a energy, as we spoke before, like a vibrational energy. Or you can bring it up as a flow, like a liquid. You could also bring it up like a lightning bolt, but I don't recommend that because you'll fry your brain. And you just bring it all the way up in the same way, and you bring, let it flow around your brain and nourish your brain and all those little glands, the pituitary gland and the pineal glands and the other wonderful glands in your brain, and just let them just grow and glow and expand in all directions, and let your awareness expand and your power expand. You can also have it flow up out of the head and flow back around and capture it again at the source. And this moving of it, this flowing of it, is very good for your spiritual power, your physical body, for everything that you want to do. Now, when you have these blocks, if you know how to make it flow and you feel it gets stuck somewhere, then you have blocks. If you can't feel the flow, you cannot say if blocks are stopping it. Because first you have to learn to feel the flow. And then when it's flowing, you can know where the blocks are. And then you can deal with them, like with EFT or whatever. So I think that was a very important question, because I know many people share the same concern. And the real answer to it is this awareness of what that energy really is. And how you can connect to it. If you can connect to energy flowing down, you can connect to energy flowing up. If you can connect to a universal ball of energy, you can connect to a little ball in your own body. It's just a question of focusing your attention. Very important. So let me know if this has helped to answer that question. Here is an amazing, amazing, amazing story, which I just was sent, which just really shows exactly this new German new medicine theory very clearly. This lady lost her brother through an accident. He had been overrun by a car. She was 3 and he was 10 at the time. They're children. This incident threw her entire family into a deep lamentation and made them all very strongly depressed, especially her mother. This went on for years, even though it wasn't a continuous thing, but it went on for years. And she died, this mother, 4 years ago, suffering a big tumor in her womb. Just think about that. An unexpected, completely intense shock affected the brain. And the brain trying to compensate by growing another child in the womb. It's not as crazy as it sounds. And the tumor appearing because it was out of control. Because there was no resolution of it. Very important story to understand how important it is for all of us to deal with these traumas. Because we are not made of steel. These are physical organisms which are connected in all ways to everything we are. And it's important we deal with it. Here's a question regarding insults. And I may not phrase this question exactly the same way, but I'm going to address the issue of insults and the stress that comes from an insult. Because this is directly connected to what we were speaking about today. Now, what actually happens when we are insulted? We are insulted because of various reasons. Like, for example, how can that person think about me like that? I expect that this person would think about me in a better way. That this person would respect me more. That this person would appreciate me more. That is why, for example, insults amongst close relationships, family members or deep friends or intimate relationships of man and woman are the most difficult to deal with. Because being insulted by family members is the hardest thing to deal with. So why? Because you expect them to have some bondage, some appreciation of you because of being a family member, being a relative, being an associate, being a lover. We are insulted not necessarily because of what they said, but because of the fact that they said something insulting at all, even if it was a little thing. If a person on the street you walked by said it, you wouldn't think twice. You would laugh. But because it is somebody that you're related to, it hurts. Whenever you have an expectation of others, how they should be towards you, and they create, okay, same word, offense. Some kind of offending and insulting is very similar. They create some kind of thing against you that's not nice. It always has to do with how you feel about yourself. Like, for example, if you tell a small child, you know, you're the stupidest little thing I ever saw. The child's not going to take it too seriously. I mean, it's just like, yeah, 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 you're stupid too. But when you're older and somebody you love says that, it hurts. Because you have more demands. Why? Because you need more support. You need more appreciation. You need to be acknowledged. You need to be verified, to be accepted. You need that others, they justify your existence, that what you are is being approved of. And because everybody is lacking this, all of us are lacking that kind of support in our lives. Insults or offenses hurt us very much. And when we are supported, we feel good about ourselves. We love ourselves. If somebody comes up to you and says you're the stupidest idiot in the whole universe, and we know it's not true, then it will not affect us. But if somebody says something to us that we believe is true somewhere deeply within us, then we get very insulted, not because of what they said, but because we find it also to be true somewhere. So what's the best way to deal with that? Well, to stop believing all these bad things about yourself. To have some faith in yourself. To have some love of yourself. When you got yourself together, you're feeling supported in yourself, you're feeling whole in yourself. Well, then these insults and offenses don't disturb you so much. But like I said before, when family members say it, you'll always be disturbed. It's just the way it is. But at least you can reduce this enormously by removing the energetic connection that you would have to an insult, by removing that feeling in yourself that you are bad in some way. That's what I like about this EFT. It gets rid of a lot of that. So even though I have not actually answered specifically the question that way, I think it's the answer to the question, really. Pooh. This question is such a huge question. It has been, I suppose, the subject of many lectures we've given in the past. But I'll just kind of go through it now in a kind of abbreviated format, sutra format, so to speak. We have here the question, regarding integration in the human society, this person says that I feel myself very distant from the normal society. I do not feel integrated into the normal society due to my past living in a spiritual society. You know, because all the people outside are the karmis, the bad guys, and one is a devotee, a good guy, so you don't associate, otherwise you're going to become like the bad guys. And so therefore, the question is that how is a person who still has this feeling of not being able to integrate with people because of developing these ideals through so many years, how's one going to do it in a way which actually does please the Lord and helps oneself? As far as, how to say, a victim of programming. You know, we can call it programming. It's a programming. In other words, you've accepted a program, how you should be, and in that program it said you should separate yourself from bad influences. Now, what is a bad influence? Let's say, okay, if you yourself do not do something you don't want to do, and you happen to talk to somebody who does something you don't want to do, like smokes or eats meat or whatever it is that you feel, that will affect you in as much as you have the capacity to be affected by it. Or that you create an idea in your mind that this would affect you in that way, and you kind of draw it towards you. Let's look at that in another way. Let's say, for example, that you want to integrate in society. Well, you know, you have always a choice how far you want to go. You can be friends with your neighbor, but you don't have to eat a hamburger in their house as a demonstration of your friendship. You can talk, you can have fun, but you can draw limits. If you don't want to do something, say it. I don't do that. That doesn't mean you can't associate with somebody if you don't particularly want to do a particular thing with them. Now, it also, there are other ways to look at it too. You could look at it like, are they bad or fallen or something inferior? Or are they just in a different place? Now, if you think of it as a hierarchical thing, that you are advanced, so you are up here because you've done so much spiritual stuff, and they are doing not spiritual stuff, so they are down there, then you're going to have problems, because you're going to have problems integrating with those below you because of your superiority, your elitism. If you look at it that you are in your evolutionary process and they are in their evolutionary process, you have your way of seeing your situation now, they have their way of seeing their situation now. Maybe last lifetime they were different, maybe you were, maybe you'll be different next lifetime, maybe they will. But if you look at the essence of what people are, which is a spirit soul, spiritual being, and you communicate with the spirit of people, it's easier to integrate with them, you know, in common ways, even without being having a spiritual discussion, just assisting in simple ways, or, you know, doing stuff for each other, or just talking or hanging out. If you try that in little ways and just appreciate the good in people, wherever, whatever they may be, whoever they may be, just appreciate the good in them, you'll do a great service for them. Anyway, that's just in sutra format.